This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
Yes, it's that time again of the week where we get together and discuss the biggest stories in tech. Yes, hello and welcome to Tech Plus with myself, Jan, and also Kane. Hello, Kane. How's it, man?
Hello. Thank you for having me. Back at it again.
Yes, we survived Friday the 13th, and also we celebrate 170 days now with no load shedding.
Ooh, I thought Friday the 13th was going to have something to do with that. I thought at least my power would cut once, but I was all right.
Well, actually, on Friday the 13th, there was a notification from Eskom, and I thought, oh no, what a comeback this would be on Friday the 13th. But no, it was just to say, hey, we're marking 170 days.
So, my word. And they announced that. That's crazy.
Yeah, because it was also a power alert. You know when you get the power alert, what that means.
Yeah. Oh, then you start worrying.
Yeah, yeah, but
immediately start reaching for the AA recyclable batteries.
Yeah, yes, but I said to somebody last night, I can't believe that we just made it through an entire winter, a very cold and harsh winter with no load shedding.
I know.
Really, that is a Christmas miracle.
And normally, winters are the absolute worst. Yeah, they're normally the
so
absolute worst.
So summer's going to be a breeze now,
well,
I reckon.
I think we're in for a good summer.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could hold the winter off,
yeah,
surely we can hold
the
summer.
Sure, the air cons use less electricity than heaters.
Well,
that's the other thing.
That's a good question. I know that's... I would actually love to do that, because, you know, an air conditioner can actually heat up or cool down.
That's right, yes.
So I have to ask, you know, would an air conditioner heating something up take more or less energy than something that would take the same amount of time to heat up the same size room?
We need an air conditioning
expert. How do you even get one of those? When I grow up, I'm going to study air conditioning. I'll be the smartest air conditioner known to man.
Hey, listen to this. Yes. It must be a cool job. Dad joke. Yeah, I know, it was lame, sorry.
Speaking of power, I actually saw that Eskom had some plans to revitalize nuclear. Apparently, nuclear is one of the most affordable ways to generate electricity for South Africa at the moment, but apparently nuclear power will be central to South Africa's future power energy plans, providing affordable clean energy for the country's baseload requirements. This is according to Department of Electricity and Energy Deputy Director General for Nuclear, who said the nuclear seminar hosted in Tshwane on Thursday, 12 September, provides an excellent opportunity for the country. The main focus of the discussions here is discussing the role of nuclear energy as part of the energy mix in South Africa. And nuclear is a central part of South Africa's energy mix to provide baseload electricity. It provides one of the cheapest and affordable generation options. So, I mean, how do you feel about nuclear?
We already have nuclear in Cape Town.
Yeah.
Coburg, but that's the only one we've got.
And I remember when load shedding was at some of its worst, I believe Coburg was even down as well.
Yeah.
They would like, Coburg was down for maintenance, and we were at stage four. It was...
Man, and you know what? We all made it through it. We're still here.
Yeah.
We're tough people, eh?
We are.
South Africans. Damn.
So apparently the seminar has given Electricity and Energy Minister the opportunity to engage with key stakeholders in the nuclear space, including providing ideas for a sustainable solution to South Africa's energy crisis. In January 2024, a new determination kicked off a process to procure 2,500 megawatts of nuclear power for the country. The plan was taken from the previously approved Integrated Resource Plan in 2019. Several months later, he said a team was at the advanced stages of completing the procurement structure for the nuclear power station, with plans to publish details of the bidding process by the end of August 2024. However, the plan was put on ice in mid-August to allow for more, this was interesting, public participation to boost transparency. Apparently, they went on to say that they carry the responsibility of ensuring that this process that we're undertaking is subject to the highest levels of public scrutiny. The last thing we want is to do a major build program on the back of suspicion that the department and government is hiding something from the public. I mean, very real thoughts. I mean, what are your? I mean, if you heard that a nuclear power station was going to be set up near you, what are you doing? Are you happy with that? Do you have?
No.
So you would only have a problem with it if it was close to you.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't even know. Even in the same town, I wouldn't be very comfortable.
Like, what is too close? Is if
the same province is already too close?
Well, I'm sure we have a nuclear power station in the Western Cape, do we?
Yeah, the one in Cape Town.
So I mean, you're already losing there.
Yeah, I'm already feeling uncomfortable. How about you? How do you feel about nuclear? I mean, how do we know it's going to be managed effectively, and how do we know it won't impact the environment and all that?
I think
stuff?
Those are the scariest factors about nuclear. It's not the generation of power, it's the maintenance and management of the power generation facility.
Yeah.
And that would be one thing that scares me. But I do have to look at it from the other side and say, well, what is the cheapest way to generate energy? And if nuclear is cheaper and cleaner, is it worth not using coal? It's a hell of a thing to answer. I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone else who has to worry about public safety has to make those decisions. I just hope that they make the right one. But I think I'd be fine with nuclear power, just as long as it doesn't lead anything to stop us from having load shedding again. As long as it's, I don't want to wake up one day and I have seven fingers on the one hand and four on the other.
Well, yeah, it's just please no Chernobyl stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And we had a moment where we were testing the waters a little bit with our nuclear station. I remember it was paused or shut down.
Yeah, there was a leak or something.
That was crazy. Speaking of crazy, apparently Disney Plus is hiking prices in South Africa. I'm sure we just spoke about
it,
Disney.
Thank goodness I left it.
Really? Months How long ago is now? Months?
Yeah.
Really, eh?
Yeah, it wasn't worth it anymore. Like, all those old shows I've got on the hard drive anyway, so why do I have to...
I know, they do have a bit of an older selection.
Yeah, there's not new stuff, you know, but a great selection, but still, you know.
Good shows, old though, not many new ones.
Yeah.
But Disney Plus has confirmed that it will implement a price hike from the 6th of November 2024 for new customers, while existing customers will start paying more from the 6th of December. The subscription fee is set to increase from $139 per month to $159 per month, representing a 14.39% increase. And apparently pricing will increase in select markets globally at different times throughout the remainder of the calendar year, as per their previous earnings call, is something Disney told MyBroadband. The pricing increase will take effect from 6 November, and if you have a current subscription, that'll only take place on the 6th of December. Assuming its annual subscription price formula remains the same, these subscribers will pay $1,590 per year following the price increase.
Eyeball.
Would you pay R1,500 per year for Disney?
There's no bloody way.
I think if I was choosing between buying a DVD player for R1,700 and a Disney Plus subscription for 1 year for R1,700, what am I getting more out of?
Yeah.
The Disney Plus subscription.
Yeah, I suppose.
Because I can't play anything out the DVD player for the rest of the year if I don't want to spend any more money. But times have changed, and I even read recently that one of our other providers, you won't believe who this is, Telkom of all places, in fact, is apparently going to compete against DStv. So listen to this model that they're deciding to bring to the table.
Okay, oh dear. Here
so
it comes.
Telkom plans to launch a content platform with Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, and other streaming services for one fee. Telkom Consumer CEO Langa Sior told ITWeb on the road that it is creating a content model instead of investing in content and becoming a content producer. Telkom is building a content aggregating platform where users can subscribe to a bundle of streaming services. This will allow users to subscribe to Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Disney Plus for just one fee. This fee cannot be lower than potentially paying for the individual services. I don't know how. And apparently they will aggregate all the streaming services and offer it to you as a bundle. He added that Telkom will provide the data needed for their subscribers to stream the content they subscribe to. Apparently the service is built on a revenue share model, which allows Telkom to do what it is good at, providing telecommunication services while still benefiting from streaming revenue. Apparently, if it does sound familiar, that's because MultiChoice actually had the exact same plan with its DStv platform. They also said, well, you can, you know, bundle different streaming services and pay for it all underneath one DStv premium account, which really means for the first time ever, officially, as of next month, my Telkom and DStv will be competitors. Did you ever think you'd see that day? I always thought there would be more likelihood that DStv becomes an ISP than Telkom becoming a content streaming platform.
Yeah, but Kane, I'm not convinced. This business model you just explained to me,
it's not the most sound.
This
I'll just
thing.
Buy it, I mean, myself.
Won't these services have a problem with it, you know, and they won't get their full money for it? So how are they making money with this? How's this working?
I think what their plan is, they're going to go and tell Netflix that we want to buy. They can do some math and they can see, okay, 250,000 people who use our streaming service want Netflix as well. So they're offering to purchase 250,000 subscriptions from Netflix, and they're probably going to try and get a discount on each of those subscriptions because they're coming with 250,000.
I'm just not convinced. But, you know, DStv this week, they're busy cracking down on the pirates.
Yes.
And they're actually trying to right now, with all the major ISPs, to get people who commit these acts, to get them blocked, their IPs blocked, and to find them.
Okay.
Via the ISPs. So they're chatting to whoever your ISP is, and if they monitor it and see that you are streaming DStv content illegally, original content by MultiChoice DStv, then they're going to find you, and they're going to block you. Mm. And fine you, and put you in jail, possibly. So, do you think, I think they're trying to legally do it now, so they obviously it's not very easy. So you've got to work with the internet service providers all around the country. You also have your smaller internet service providers like we do here in the Garden Route, so they're going to have to individually contact everybody. And, you know, then you've got to ask, is it legal to monitor somebody's activity on his account, you know, all that kind of questions.
It's akin to Showmax coming to you and saying that, imagine Netflix was illegal in South Africa and Showmax wanted your ISP to look at your internet browsing activity to see if you're watching Netflix. Because if you're watching Netflix, then they're gonna have some trouble with you.
So I don't know how legal this would be. No. I think they're trying to find a way to do it. But
I think
privacy, the way they're gonna do it,
I think piracy needs to be solved. I think we need to buckle down on it. But I don't think the answer to that is remove internet privacy.
I think this Poppy Act that we've got here in South Africa is probably got to be a problem as well, you know, because you can't just access people's personal information.
That being said, if they did instead speak to the ISPs to say, hey, we found this site and everybody who watches content on this site is infringing on our copyright, please would you provide us or send out an email to all the users that are getting content from this site as a cease and desist like effort, or they could sue the ISP and force them to do a cease and desist for all users accessing that site or want to punish them. But I don't know if you could actually access browsing specific history and start looking through it, and because that means you would have to turn through every single person's browsing history to find the 10% of people who know how to do it and the 5% that are actually doing it. So 95% of people lose their privacy, so 5% of people can be identified. That's not good math.
Yeah. And what about the people doing torrents and all that stuff?
Well, that's another whole thing. I mean, that's on the network, but under the network almost, you know.
So I know somebody or knew somebody. They've got, I think, 3 computers in the house, and all of those computers have uTorrent on them, and all of them have all these threads of shows downloading day and night.
No, never.
I want to know what that ISP says about that. I don't know if they're still doing that, but at one stage they did. That was quite excessive.
Yeah, that is absolutely excessive. You know what I think is excessive? Hewlett Packard, HP. Who doesn't know HP? Apparently, South Africa just greenlighted their Hewlett Packard Enterprises acquisition of Juniper Networks. So, Juniper Networks is an American multi-international corporation headquartered in Sunnyvale, California, and the company develops and markets networking products, routers, switches, network management software, network security products, and software-defined network technology. So HP, the guys we know, I'm sure everybody knows HP. HP is actually purchasing them for 252 billion rand.
Yeah.
More than half of what Hewlett Packard's actual net worth is. So they're making a purchase for a company that is more than half of what they're worth, which I think is pretty crazy. You know, that's actually pretty mad.
It is mad.
One company is spending half of their wealth to purchase another. They're going to have some big plans. They must have
some mega
plans.
Let's hope it works out. Yeah, geez. That's gonna be quite risky.
On that note, is it time for a music break?
It sure is. Let's go for some tunes. And welcome back to Tech Plus on this Saturday. Hope you are having a great one so far. It's, of course, our weekly discussion of all things tech. If you just joined us, welcome. Kane, what is next?
Back at it. We are talking about what I found super surprising. We have an online shopping boom in South Africa, but it's not your traditional online shopping boom. It's actually happening inside of informal settlements. So e-commerce is booming in South Africa's informal settlements. Some of us know it as locations. Yep. However, this is not in the way many expect, right? You would expect, okay, well, does that mean they're pulling up their laptops and buying off of Amazon? Are there now Take-A-Lot customers? You know, your Take-A-Lot vans going into the location and dropping off Take-A-Lot parcels? No. In fact, the apps that are primarily leading to the increase in e-commerce in South Africa, specifically in informal settlements, is WhatsApp and Facebook Lite.
What?
Okay. So this is according to informal economy experts and author Gigi Alcock, who explained that the most low-end smartphones come pre-installed with apps like WhatsApp and Facebook Lite, which serve as the default social media apps among many township residents. Online and delivery is becoming very popular at informal township outlets, particularly in the fast or out-of-home food sector, he said to My Broadband. However, it is not using the typical apps. It's specifically with WhatsApp and Facebook Lite. Apparently, people are using smartphones and stuff in ways that work for them. So we've seen over quite a long time the kind of growth WhatsApp and Facebook have added. Alcock explained that apps like these offer affordable access to online messaging and social media for lower income earners, with many mobile operators selling specific bundles for these platforms. The most common form of online shopping is WhatsApp. Most informal outlets will have a Facebook page and linked to WhatsApp. So apparently people will actually, this was actually from one of the guys, it was actually spearheaded from a guy in one of the townships who had a bakery. And when COVID came around, all of a sudden he couldn't sell his goods anymore. So he launched a Facebook page where he listed his goods. And if someone wanted to, they could send him a WhatsApp with a pin and the order, and he would deliver the buns and take the cash. And that is probably one of the most predominant forms of e-commerce in informal settlements right now. And I find that quite fascinating, you know, that we out here using, you know, Take-A-Lot and Bid-or-Buy and Amazon. And here they come in with their like makeshift Facebook page with their little WhatsApp. If you show that to any person outside of that area, they'll be like, this is a scam. But in the most or least scammy way possible, they've actually turned something that wasn't built for something into something that actually serves a true use case. And one of the reasons it's so successful is because the most simple form of phone, the most cheapest, simple smartphone that you can buy, has Facebook and WhatsApp already installed. And apparently that's the new type of e-commerce in those areas.
I like that, eh?
That's very cool.
Very innovative.
Yeah, so that goes to show. I mean, if you're someone listening in and you have an idea, you know, don't forget about those locations. There are money spenders. There are capable people.
Yeah.
They're out here buying online stuff using WhatsApp and Facebook combos. You know, like left, right, Facebook, WhatsApp combo to purchase your bread and butter in the morning. Like you give that to a normal person and he wouldn't survive. He would be like, no, I don't feel confident doing this. Something doesn't feel right. Imagine you just go to Facebook, find a random page that has some groceries on it, see there's a WhatsApp number, just shoot your pin over with a list of ingredients, and then someone knocks on your door and then you pay them.
That's very cool.
That's pretty cool. So that is one note. And then on the other note, we were talking about the fact that you need cheap smartphones to make this possible. In the past, you know, people didn't even have access to smartphones, so e-commerce wasn't even possible. But the fact that even the most basic of entry-level smartphones are able to provide these services, we're seeing this boom start to take place. So what I thought would be quite interesting is I was like, well, I wonder what South Africa's most popular budget phone is.
I was actually going to, now while you're busy talking, I was actually going to go and check on Takealot, what is the cheapest smartphone?
Ah.
But you tell us.
So let me tell you. So, you know, when we're looking, I went out to look for South Africa's most popular budget smartphone, and South Africa's two biggest mobile networks and top online retailer, Takealot, recently told MyBroadband that the Samsung Galaxy A04e was the country's best-selling smartphone in the first half of 2024. However, its successor, the Galaxy A05, has started to outsell it. The Galaxy A04e was first launched in October 2022 and rolled out in South Africa in January 2023. The nearly two-year-old smartphone's recommended retail price has remained about 2,000 rand since its debut, with online retailers currently selling it for under 1,800 rand. That's the Galaxy A04. MyBroadband also found several listings for network-locked versions of the phone that apparently were not much cheaper. So that's something to look out for. If you're going to be buying a cheap phone for a couple thousand rand, you know, definitely make sure that it's not network-locked. Otherwise, you can't choose what network you use.
Yeah, otherwise, it's just locked to one network. I didn't even know that networks still do that. Are they even allowed to still do that? Because I remember, you know, in the early 2000s when cell phones just came out, you know, you had these phones, and if you got it on an MTN contract, you can forget about putting a Vodacom or anything else in, and there was no way to unlock it or do so legally. But you know what? I just checked on Takealot, and I sorted it from low to high, and I typed in smartphone, and the cheapest one that's coming up here is a Mobicell Neo Plus smartphone with a 5 megapixel camera and a 2000 mAh battery. And guess how much that will cost you, Kane?
Whoa, I'm going to say 1,500 rand.
$599.
Whoa! $599, and cheapest. You too can buy products off of Facebook.
It's the cheapest, and it's cute, man. Look at that.
Hey!
It's cute, you know?
Cute as. So that the one I told you about was the A04, but you do have an upgraded version of it now. It's the A05, and that's probably apparently retailing for usually about 2,500, but apparently you can pick it up for like 2,000 rand at online retailers. There is some differences between the A04 and the A05. Remember, these are the most popular, most affordable smartphone brands. So your A04 has a 6.5-inch LCD screen, while the A05 has a 6.7-inch, so it's got a bigger screen. It has a better CPU. It's got a worse CPU. The A04 actually has a better CPU. The RAM is better on the A05. The storage is better on the A05 by 32 gigabytes, a total of 64 gigabytes. The rear camera is significantly better, 2 to 3 times better, with a 50 megabyte megapixel camera at the back and a 8 megapixel opposed to 5 megapixel camera at the front. The definite winner is going to be the A05. So for a couple extra bucks, you actually get... It would be insane if you could get a phone like this 5 years ago.
Yeah.
This is like the Samsung Galaxy S7.
Mm.
You know, better. It's better than that. And that was a 25,000 rand phone a couple of years ago.
Yo.
So it shows you how much technology's really changed over the last few years. But maybe not always in the best possible way. Did you know how Huawei or Huawei? What? How did you say it?
Huawei.
How do you even remember that?
I have to.
I have to. Good answer.
Yeah. So people don't laugh at me. But, so
to avoid
just,
the ridicule.
Yeah. So forget the H. It's like a silent H. So start with the...
The W.
Yeah, Huawei.
It's definitely not an English word.
Just think of it as a W.
Like, imagine someone said that to you in school. It's like, don't start the word with an H. Just rather leave the H silent and start with a W. Someone's going to be like, what W precedes an H in English? Like, what even is that word? So anyway, in that true nature, they decided they're going to release a new phone. And this phone is probably one of the coolest that I've ever seen. It is called a tri-fold phone. So just for a second, imagine a phone that can not only fold once, but twice.
Oh, dear.
So I can just imagine people in their head like thinking like, does that like folding a sandwich and then folding again? Like,
imagine being angry and putting that phone down.
It's like as thick as a brick. So this phone doesn't actually fold once. Like it doesn't fold horizontally and then fold vertically or something crazy like that. It actually folds twice on itself. Have you ever seen a three-fold pamphlet?
Yes.
A pamphlet that folds out from three.
Yeah. Those it's like that. Grosses.
But instead of the, you know, the pamphlet opens one at the front, one at the back, and then it, and that's the phone.
Whoa.
It's got a screen at the back, a screen in the middle, and a screen at the front. It's three screens, and it unfolds into a tablet or back into a phone.
Wow.
So you fold it into a phone, and it's this normal-looking phone, and then you unfold it, and it becomes two times more phones.
Yeah.
And it's basically three phones next to each other. It's a full tablet.
It's almost like a tablet, yeah.
Yes.
Would you buy it? Would you get it?
For the tablet, yes, until I did a little bit of, you know, good old... fact-checking, research, mathematical computation, what happens if I drop it?
Oh, no, it can't be good.
It's not every day that you can drop something like a phone that has six sides, you know? There's not much good that's going to happen.
No, you've got to tell us that it's got a built-in parachute.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have a built-in parachute. And if you do happen to break the screens, it will just cost you $1,100 to fix it.
Oh,
which is about 20,000 rand for the new screen.
No, I can die with the phone.
So I thought, yeah. I dropped my phone a few times and luckily it holds its own. But I have seen many things in my life, but I've never seen a phone cover that can fit onto a phone that folds three times. It doesn't make sense.
Good luck finding a cover.
Or how it stays like protective, you know?
How you won't find a cover for that thing.
No, imagine putting, just imagine for a second, wrapping a gel cover over an iPad.
Mm-mm.
And then try to fit that same cover over your phone.
No.
It's not going to fit. There's a few space issues on that. One needs to consider. So I don't know if I would buy it. I don't have a Mini Cooper to replace it with every single time.
No.
But still a very, very cool phone. And if I had three lying around, or I could buy two for the price of one, I probably would. Because then at least if I drop it or something, it's not total train smash.
How do you take a call on it?
Would you have to choose a side? What side do I feel like today? One of six. Which side has the mic? Can you hear me now? No, sorry, I can't hear you. Okay, hold on. Let me change the side here quick. Side number two. Can you hear me now?
That is going to be such an annoyance. I can tell you already. Right. Unless the mic is central somewhere. I don't know.
You know what? It's probably one of those things that they'll go back in time and they'll be like, listen to these two dumbasses that were speaking on radio about how bad tri-fold phones are. And now it's all there is tri-fold.
Well, I can tell you that one of them definitely won't be buying one of those.
I just can't imagine someone being like, you know what I want? I want a phone in the shape of a three-fold pamphlet. It's like, what a lot to work with. How does it fit in your pocket? Does it rattle? You know, like, because it has two folds to it. Does the screens have like bevel? Do you see where the fold is?
Yeah, can you see? Probably not.
Because I think the only thing worse for me than a phone that turns into an iPad is if it has three lines or two lines down the center where you see it fold.
That would be terrible. You know? Or maybe you could feel the line, you know,
and
drag
like
your
lump.
Finger over it. Yeah, that's already a big no.
No, you see. Mm. So, but that's Huawei's new tri-fold phone. If you see it rolling around, don't be shy. But that's not the only phone company coming out with new phones. You guessed it. It's time. The iPhone 16 is out.
Yes. Yeah, man. That was a big story. It came out just after last week's show.
Yeah.
So we couldn't discuss the features.
It's so close.
But yeah. But, I was checking out the website and all the features and everything. And it looks really nice and so on. But what is the feature that really stands out to you that makes it different to the other phones?
Well, let's take a look at it, right? So Apple's new iPhone 16, 16 Plus, 16 Pro, and 16 Pro Max, so you still got the same four lineup, are already up for pre-order ahead of the debut on September 20th. It'll be a few more weeks before the Apple Intelligence AI features arrive. So anybody that's purchasing the iPhone 16 for AI or Apple Intelligence.
Oh.
I still have so many qualms about their terminology for AI.
The arrogance.
Apple Intelligence features. You won't have any Apple Intelligence features until a few months. So even if you get the phone, you know, relatively soon, you won't have those AI features, but they will be coming. They're not like invisible. So Apple is serving them up in a beta as part of iOS 18.1 in October, but without those hyped up software features, it's just what's there to be excited about, right? So here's a few of the specs that you can expect for all the tech guys out there. We have the iPhone 16 with a 6.1 inch 2556 by 1179 OLED screen. So basically a 2K 6.1 inch screen on the iPhone 16. The iPhone 16 Plus has a 6.7 inch screen, so that's your bigger version of the iPhone 16, but it also has kind of a 2K resolution OLED screen. The iPhone 16 Pro, which is the Pro version of the iPhone 16, but not the larger version of the iPhone 16, has a 6.3 inch screen, so it's got a little bit of a smaller screen, but it's got that 2K resolution screen. And then you've got the iPhone 16 Pro Max. That's got your Pro version of the iPhone 16 plus the bigger size. That's got the bigger size of them all, 6.9 inch screen, almost a massive screen. Basically 3K resolution, 2868 by 1320 OLED. The iPhone 16 Pro and iPhone 16 Pro Max both have above 60 hertz. So when you're watching a movie, you're already watching at about 30 frames per second. This phone can go up to 120 frames per second. Yep. Means it's going to be butter smooth. But all of the phones can go up to 2000 nit brightness. Your monitor or your TV, if it's very, very, very high quality, can probably reach like 600 nit brightness.
Wow.
So 2000 nit brightness is, and you can imagine you're going in the sun with your phone. You don't take your TV out into the blazing sun and
well,
you try to watch.
Not usually.
Not usually. Maybe once a week. So then some of the other things that you can expect, obviously the weight, they're all three of the phones except for the Pro Max are under 200 grams, which is like super impressive. That's light as hell. That's really light. With the Pro Max being 227 grams. The iPhone 16 has 22 hours of video playback battery capacity. The iPhone 16 Pro or the iPhone 16 Plus has 27 hours of battery. The iPhone 16 Pro also has 27 hours of battery, and the iPhone 16 Pro Max has an impressive 33 hours of video playback battery. All are rocking the same CPU except the Pro version and the two Pro version phones. They're all 6-core, which are 6-core GPU and 16-core neural engine CPUs. They all come in various sizes. They're all USB-C now. So all iPhones are now USB-C, USB-C, and all the cameras on the back are 48 megapixel with a pretty powerful front 12 megapixel camera as well. Very, very impressive. Is it worth it? Well, the Apple Intelligence features better be insane, because we're not talking about anything monumentally game-changing with the iPhone. But we are talking about monumental software-based features, which will be Apple Intelligence, or AI, integrated with Siri that can communicate with different apps on your phone and do things. Like, hey Siri, could you send my mom a WhatsApp message to let me know I'm going to be late because I need to go pick up milk? And can you please also set a reminder that I can go pick up milk? But just for quick as well, just do a Google research exercise to find out which is better for me, low-fat, long-life, or UHT treated full cream milk. It'll just do the whole thing. It'll message, it'll Google search, it'll tell you what's better, we'll add in your diary, it will do all of that. That's what the Apple Intelligence features are going to be like. That's what the Samsung AI features are going to be like.
It's basically like a personal assistant.
It's like a PA. Yeah. PA that understands language.
Exactly.
It's cognitive.
What if she messes up? Who do you blame?
Look, No one's going to argue if you just throw the phone across the room. You can actually be
abusive. You're fired.
You don't have to be nice. It's not a human being. You know, your secretary, shame. You made a mistake. No, you just throw it off the building. Goodbye. Boom. New phone. Claim on insurance.
Let's just hope they sorted out the overheating issue.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Maybe the manufacturing in India does better this time around.
But all in all, a beautiful phone. Beautiful phones. And I'd rather have that phone than that one you mentioned earlier that folds into 6 million pieces.
And before we go to the next music break, are you ready for this alarming stat?
Oh dear.
Unless you live in the UK and you're protected by UK privacy laws, Facebook's new AI has been trained on anything you've posted to Facebook since 2007. So if you've posted anything to Facebook or Instagram since 2007, it was used to train Facebook or Meta's AI.
Okay, so I matriculated, but I was still stupid back then. So.
Yeah, everything, anything you've posted, absolutely anything.
Oh my gosh.
Whether you've posted a picture, a song, anything, a drawing, anything, absolutely anything you've posted, it was used to train the AI, except for in the UK, because they have a privacy law that prevents that. But apparently they're getting around that as well at the moment, so that's only a matter of time before British people also have absolutely no privacy and AI's trained on their data.
But they didn't ask us for permission.
I don't remember signing nothing about AI.
It's probably somewhere in their little...
It's in the terms and conditions. By signing up to Facebook, you no longer have any right to anything, even oxygen. You know, like with Disney Plus?
Just different wording.
Because you sign up for a Disney Plus subscription, any damage you sustain at
That was ridiculous.
An event is not liable.
Wasn't that case dropped now? I think that case
was
dropped.
I don't know what happened, but they were barking down the wrong tree
ridiculous.
With that rule, eh?
I've never seen
That was the craziest story ever. And on that note, it's time for a music break.
It's time for a music note.
A music note. One note. We're back from the music notes. Saturdays at 10.
Saturday mornings at 10.
I wake up at night to that.
And we're back on Tech Plus with the final stretch for this week. Kane, what's next?
So we're off to the races. Apple has got an FDA authorization to turn its AirPods into hearing aids. Whoa.
Wow, that's awesome.
Well, let's see what this has in store, right? So just days after Apple announced a new hearing aid feature for the second generation AirPods Pro, the US Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has authorized the software that powers this functionality. In a press release, the FDA describes Apple's solution as the first over-the-counter or OTC hearing aid software device. Now, anybody who knows anything about hearing aids will tell you one thing. They are so expensive.
Yeah.
There's nothing cheap about them.
Yeah.
You can't even dissect it in any way to make it cheap.
But they're also very cool because you can take phone calls on them.
Yeah.
You can watch TV or listen to the radio through them or just music.
Yep.
And do
you can also have perfect hearing and turn the sound up extremely high. And you can hear every conversation around you completely dialed in.
Right through the walls.
Someone taps on a window and you almost fall off your seat, you know.
That's actually very clever.
So apparently the feature was evaluated in a clinical study with 118 subjects with perceived mild to moderate hearing loss. According to the FDA, and the results demonstrated that subjects used the HAF self-fitting strategy achieved similar perceived benefit as subjects who received professional fitting of the same device. So enabling the AirPods Pro to double as a clinical grade hearing aids is one of the several new features that Apple is bringing to the second gen AirPods Pro this fall as part of the company's continued focus on hearing health. The earbuds will also gain a hearing protection mode that allows them to safeguard your ears in loud environments like concerts. Hearing protection will be enabled by default and preserve natural vibrant sound at loud performances. That is insane. That's crazy. That's a real life. That's I can't hear properly. I have struggles. I don't have enough money to buy hearing aids. I buy a pair of Apple AirPods for a 10th or 15th of the price.
This is life changing
stuff.
And I
can hear my children again.
Mm.
That is game changing.
That's amazing.
Plus, also doubling as hearing actual support.
Wow.
Like, oh, wow, I'm using heavy machinery. I'm at a loud concert. I'm at a hockey game of my kids and they're loud as hell. And I need to protect my ears. That is some really cool features. That's probably one thing that I've saved Apple. Like, you actually achieved a non-gimmick level, like, optimization to your tech.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
You actually turned it medical.
That's brilliant.
It's really cool.
That's going to be a major selling point.
I back that.
Same.
Smart tech that is medically graded. That is awesome. So that's something to look forward to. Also, in other news, iFixit has created... Anyone who doesn't know what iFixit is, they're like the guys that are the answer to the MacGyvers. You know anybody in your life that's a MacGyver that just has problems and just... jumps out and fixes it themselves. You know, its laptop screen doesn't work. You come home one day and there's just 30,000 pieces of a laptop just opened up on the floor. You know, completely taken apart to repair. Those kind of people, we use iFixit. And iFixit essentially creates tools and tech that we can use to open our devices to fix things that aren't working. And it actually has inspired what has been called the consumer level repair warranty like solution, which is essentially to allow consumer level people like me and you to buy a kit off the internet that allows us to repair our devices with some degree of success. And it comes along with videos and information, and you don't have to be a mechanical engineer from Harvard or design rocket ships for a living to be able to actually fix your tech. In fact, you could be someone with very little technical application. It's just watching a video and following the steps. 5-10 screws, little thing here or there, you do it all. That's iFixit. And they've just developed a USB-C soldering iron, which is super cool.
Wowie.
Because also with soldering irons, I don't know, I think there's often some people who's never used a soldering iron might be a little bit, you know, concerned that they're going to hurt themselves, yeah, or they're dealing with dangerous machinery, or, you know, they're melting metal. It could be extremely dangerous. So to have a USB-C powered soldering iron, it might actually be a problem because it might undermine the danger elements of it. Like, it's a really hot piece of tech. But I think it's still pretty cool that, you know, your mom and pop shop or me and you can just buy a USB-C powered soldering iron, watch an iFixit YouTube video, open up our phone and reattach the screen.
That's brilliant.
Brilliant. Love that. Very, very cool. So that's iFixit for you. Apparently, Microsoft has laid off more than 650 Xbox employees.
Oh, wow.
Xbox has been losing the console war a little bit, so it is kind of understandable that they have to do some things against that. Apparently also there is a pretty impressive, it's not really tech related, but I still think it is quite impressive, is Lego, the official Lego company, created a life-size Lego McLaren P1. So they made a car that is literally the size of a car, well, sort of, close enough to the size of a car, at out of Legos. 342,817 Technic pieces.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it's powered by 768 Lego electric motors. This bad boy can reach a top speed of 40 miles per hour. A Lego car.
That's awesome.
A Lego
More
car.
More reasons to love Lego.
A Lego car with Lego engines can reach 40 miles per hour. That is ridiculous. That's insane.
Cute. I want one.
But they do have a few suggestions for you if you too would like to build yourself a McLaren P1 out of Legos. The first thing they said is it took about 6,134 hours to design and plan.
Ish.
And about 2,200 hours to build.
Oh, well, 8,000 hours. Oh, no.
8,000 hours. That is insane. Do you want to know how much 8,000 hours is? If you were to sit down for 8,000 hours and just work, it would take you almost a full year.
Okay.
333 days.
Okay. Yo, okay, with no break. Okay.
That's just...
No breaks.
You didn't sleep for 333 of those days.
That's not possible.
So maybe 600 and something days. But that's a long time. But
no, that's a very long time.
Still impressive.
Really committed. Did you hear about the people who went to space this week?
More people, yeah. They didn't get stranded, though.
Yes. Do you
Tell
have a story?
Me about it. I think I don't.
Well, I do. It was a billionaire, of course, a billionaire.
That's how most stories start.
And an engineer. They've become the first non-professional crew to perform one of the riskiest maneuvers in space, and that is a spacewalk. His name is Jared Isaacman and Sarah Gillis. They stepped out of the SpaceX spacecraft around 15 minutes apart wearing specially designed suits. And Mr. Isaacman, that's the billionaire who's obviously got way too much money, said, "Back at home, we all have a lot of work to do. But right here from in space, Earth sure looks like a perfect world." So it must have been really beautiful.
Wow.
It was obviously commercially funded by Mr. Isaacman. And before only astronauts with government-funded space agencies could do a spacewalk. So images were also broadcast live, showing the two crew, that's Jared and Sarah, emerge from the White Dragon capsule, floating 700 kilometers above the Earth below. And spacewalks are one of the most difficult maneuvers in space, so the fact that a private company has pulled it off as a milestone in the history of space travel.
Wow.
So nice if you're a billionaire, you know, and you're getting a bit bored here on Earth.
I'm going to go for a quick spacewalk.
Yeah.
Drop some bees on that, some billions on that.
Yeah, but you should see the images. I checked it out. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
I,
can you just
I
imagine,
can't believe they just went up there, imagine, and they're fine.
You know, the craziest thing about why I think it would just look so insane when you're in space looking down on Earth is because anywhere you look on Earth, there is an obstruction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's just no way to see a lot at once. Like you, even if you look straight, you can see like 4 kilometers and then the curvature of the Earth just disappears. Now, you're in space and you're far enough away that you see the whole Earth in front of you.
Yep. Like oh, there, yeah.
There's nothing, there's no obstruction.
Very few of us will see that in real life.
You can actually witness the scale between you and the Earth.
I think that's incredibly powerful.
It's just the biggest object you'll ever see in your life, and when you're done looking at it, you go live on it. It's crazy.
Yeah, he must be a changed man now that he's getting back to Earth. He is back safe. Unfortunately, the other two people in that separate mission, they still were
they watched it from the space station. Must be nice going home.
Hey, can we get a lift?
Some say when they drove past the space station, there were just three guys peeking out the window, sadness in their eyes.
Oh, shame. So they still were floating around until February next year.
They watched shame, man. Now. That's horrible.
You see, I mean, but listen, okay, what are they doing every day? How do they keep busy?
Well, they just stopped watching them. That was that entertainment out the window.
What do they do?
I
mean, you can only do so much and see so much. What do you do now?
I have no idea.
Can they play Monopoly up there? I don't know.
Minecraft. They're playing Minecraft. They're building a new Earth.
They must have some. Do they have tech up there?
I hope so.
Phones and stuff. Obviously, no reception. I don't know.
They got to at least have an Asus ROG or like some handheld gaming console, PS5, surely.
Yeah. So it must be tech, because board games will float around and won't work.
You know, it's actually quite interesting if they have a PS5 up there, because most people stay on Earth playing PS5 games or being in space. They're in space playing PS5 games or being on Earth.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And a good way that's to end it.
That's a good way to think of it, eh?
That is a good way to put it. And finally, here's another, maybe not the best way to put it, depending how you put it. A hacker has tricked ChatGPT to share details on how to make a bomb.
Oh dear.
In part by instructing it to play a game. So it basically made ChatGPT explain how to make a bomb by making it play a game. So that's fun.
Tricky.
That's a bit of a difficult one. Don't trust your AI. And then also, Microsoft has pitched, I think it finally reached critical levels here, AI. We didn't think it could reach any higher levels, but Microsoft has officially pitched generative AI to oil and gas companies. Fossil fuel giants have used AI for years to increase production. Now Microsoft sees the generative AI boom as an opportunity to boost profits for itself and oil and gas companies. It wants to strike deals with Karen Howe, reports for The Atlantic. Microsoft owns greenhouse gas emissions are growing with its focus on AI taking the company further away from its climate goals. So we could see generative AI coming to oil and gas, which is probably one of the biggest industries on the planet for monetary generation.
Mm.
So that is very, very interesting. But on that note, I think that's time to end.
Yeah, that's it for another week. Mid-September. Kane, thank you so much as always, and I hope you're going to have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
And thank you so much for everyone listening in, including my gran in Stillby. I hope you guys are having a great time, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place.
Cheers. Thanks, Kane.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.